Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Transitions Tuesday. This is the day when we learn all kinds of things about how to transform yourself and your life. Today is no different. We're going to be talking to Diane Altemer, who is the author of 10 Proven Strategies to Transform Your Life. Diane, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you, Pamela. I am excited to be on your show today.
Now, Diane, I see that you are an integrative life coach. What exactly does that mean?
An integrative life coach is a coach that guides you to be able to integrate all of the different parts of yourself, your experience, and your life so that you feel at peace with who you are.
So there are some life coaches who may focus specifically on work matters or employment. Some may focus specifically on relationships. You kind of do the whole thing.
Yes, and I do the whole thing very simply because whatever it is that is going on within us is what we are transferring into our marriage, into our parenting, into our business or our job. And it is essential for us to get really connected to what's going on within us and the places where we are blocked or limitations are keeping us from creating what we truly want.
So what I also hear in that is that there is a way to create what one truly wants.
Absolutely. That is what we are intended to do. And we are all here to contribute a gift. We have something special and something unique to give to the world and to our families and to achieve for ourselves. And when we are truly connected to who we are and we can really integrate all the experiences of our life, even the most difficult ones, and we know that that experience was really here to help us grow into who we're meant to be, we have the tools and the power to create what it is that we want in our life.
The idea that every single person has a special gift, I think that might be kind of difficult for some folks to grasp. Is that what you're saying? Everybody has a gift?
Absolutely. We are all extremely unique. We have something to share. And for some of us, we have a big platform, so we want to share it with 100,000 people or a million people. And for others of us, we have a smaller community with which we are sharing who we are, whether that be just our immediate family, friends, and colleagues, or, you know, some extension of our community. But regardless of our reach or number of people, we are here to share something with others, to connect with others, and to heal whatever it is that's going on within ourselves so that we can do that.
So everybody has a gift and absolutely everyone matters.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, your book, I was struck by one of the descriptors that I saw of, in fact, the name of the book is Clarity, by the way. Clarity, 10 Proven Strategies to Transform Your Life. And it's described as being able to motivate readers to dismantle the external facade. And my immediate thought was, you know, there are a whole bunch of people and they live by their external facade. They are in no way interested in dismantling it. So how do you get to those folks?
That is a great question. And really, by dismantling the facade, what I am referring to is there is nothing wrong with us creating success or having a beautiful home or striving for that new car that we really desire. But if it is something that we are using in order to cover up how we feel inside, the truth is that nothing can do that. And success, although it is amazing, does not make us feel good about who we are. It's simply a validation that we're talented in certain ways. But if there are deep-rooted issues going on within us that have us feeling bad about who we are, not feeling good enough, or feeling ashamed for something that occurred in our past, simply being successful is not going to make that go away.
And, you know, I think that gets proven to us, sadly, over and over again as we hear stories about folks who are well-known, well-respected, seem to have it all, and they've taken their lives or they've done something to really harm themselves. So this notion, this myth that success cures all is, as you're saying, it's by no stretch true.
Absolutely. And the problem is that a lot of times we are under that illusion that success is going to make us feel better, and we're waiting for it to fix us or change how we feel inside. And then when we actually, like you said, achieve that level that we've seen celebrities achieve, and it doesn't fill us up or make us feel better about who we are, it can actually be depressing and leave people hopeless. And the truth is if you're unhappy or not at peace with yourself or with something that's going on in your life, you've got to identify the root and really heal from the inside out.
You talk about, in clarity, you talk about your own experiences growing up, which sounds like they were more than a little bit challenging. Can you share some of that with us?
Yeah, my journey growing up was filled with a lot of uncertainty and very heightened emotions, which is how I became an expert on emotions, because I grew up in an alcoholic home, and being very sensitive as I am by nature was difficult because I felt so much of what was going on under the surface. I felt at a deep level the dysfunction and the things that were not being talked about. And it was really confusing. There was this unwritten rule that there were certain things that you didn't say or talk about. And I share in clarity that it was like there were two different worlds. There was what I felt inside of me, and I felt very hopeful and positive and connected, and I felt good about who I was. And then there was this outside world of what was actually happening and what I was witnessing. And those two worlds were very different. And it took many years for me to really understand that what I was experiencing internally was part of who I am, and that what was happening outside of me was really threatening my connection to myself. And my journey was one of really losing that connection at different points in my life, and then, of course, coming back to reconnecting to myself, which is step one, and the most important thing that we can do. It's step one in clarity, which is reconnecting to yourself so you can really understand how your past is influencing what you're currently experiencing, why you're reacting the way you are, and then what specifically to do to move beyond that so you can create what you want in your life.
As you talk about what was going on in your childhood, it certainly speaks to the damage that some household family secrets can bring on not just the children in the family, but in fact the entire family. Secrets can be very, very damaging.
Yes, and I know from coaching many people from different backgrounds that even if you didn't grow up in an alcoholic home, you may have grown up with a distant or an absent parent or some other difficulty, and you can relate to not having the support that you needed to work through what's happening. And that's really what the crux of clarity is all about. Many of us growing up did not have the support to properly process our emotions, simply because the people that were raising us didn't know how to teach us that an emotion is simply an emotion, and it's here to guide us. There's wisdom in it, and it's good to feel our emotions, even if they don't so-called feel great in the moment, but it's just a part of who we are as a human being. And one of the things that I share in step six in clarity is how to give your emotions a voice. How to really connect with that emotion and understand what it is here to express to you. And it's a very powerful tool to help you to both identify what you're feeling, and then once you identify it, know exactly what to do to move through that emotion so that you can move on and create more of what you want.
And in fact, you say that emotions can often lead you to the answers that you need. And if that's true, that's even more reason to really understand, to become clear about what your emotions truly are. And so many of us just don't do that.
Yes. Emotions are guides. They're messengers. They are a part of what we need to really feel at peace with who we are. And if you can really look at your emotions, even the so-called negative ones, as a friend arriving to share with you something important that you need to know about yourself. Emotions show up to really tell us how we're doing, whether we're on track, whether there's something that we really need to address. So, for example, many people avoid the emotion of anger. It's an uncomfortable emotion, or they saw somebody that was angry in their life and they decided, I am never going to act like that. But anger is a really powerful emotion because the expression of anger can simply be, this has to stop. I can't take this anymore. This isn't okay. And anger is an emotion that helps us to understand that what is going on is not aligned with who we are, or that a boundary of ours has been crossed. And you can probably hear just in the expression or languaging of how I am expressing that emotion that I'm more connected to how it feels. And when we feel our feeling, that feeling diminishes in some way. It lets go of us, and we're really able to see what it is that we then need to do in that situation to bring into it what we want.
One of the things that I often talk about is the value of curiosity, and it sounds like that's what you're saying. If you can be curious about your emotions rather than shaming and blaming and judgmental and all those sort of pretzels we twist ourselves into, that in essence, you're already on the path to becoming more clear in your life.
Yes, I love that. Bringing curiosity to what it is you're experiencing and why you're experiencing that. And then compassion to really understand that, you know, we are reacting to situations in our life for a very specific reason. And once we can understand what that reason is and why we're reacting the way we are, we have then the insight with which to make some shifts in our life and in our relationships.
So awareness, in fact, begins the journey to change.
Yes, absolutely.
Another comment that you make is that your most difficult relationship can, in fact, be your greatest gift. And you know, I think about folks who I see and who I work with, and they may come in with a relationship that is, on a good day, a bear.
Yes.
How does that become a gift?
That's a great question, and it's really very simply because every relationship that we're in has the potential to teach us something valuable about ourselves. And it's something that is going to ultimately help us grow and become more of who we're meant to be, which is really our journey in this lifetime. And if we're really willing to look at each relationship issue or struggle from this perspective, we can gain that insight about who we are, where we are in our life, and what we may need to do to heal something that's going on within us. One of the reasons our relationships are here is to help us heal. So really, by understanding how the relationship is triggering you or affecting you emotionally, and then using that insight to do your inner work or your inner reflection, you're going to emerge happier and more evolved. And one of the things that I share in Clarity is simple steps on how to do that. Because that can sound very complex and
yes,
very deep when I start talking about inner work and really looking at how you're transferring something from a past relationship to this current one. But it is very simple if you can use the tools in the book to really move through it in a way that works for you, that you can integrate into your life. And you'll see shifts in your relationships somewhat immediately at times.
So, in fact, what it sounds like is that you emerge from this work feeling more free, feeling just sort of emotionally lighter and just more connected, not only to yourself, but to the world around you.
Yes, I love that word. You feel more free. You feel at peace. You feel more connected with yourself and your ability then to really connect with other people, because we can't connect with somebody else until we're truly connected to ourselves.
Now, you know, there's at least one person listening who is saying, this is a bunch of stuff and nonsense. All of this stuff about pay attention to yourself, look within, you know, transform your own thoughts. That's just way too selfish and self-centered, and it just doesn't work. What do you say to that person?
That is a great question. What I would say to that person is we cannot give what we don't have, very simply. And if we don't feel good about who we are, we can't give to the world to the depth that we could if we felt at peace and fulfilled and happy. And so it is actually the opposite of selfish. It is selfless to really connect with yourself at a deep level and then to bring that energy into everybody that you connect with.
The idea that by healing and growing yourself, there's a ripple effect. You can heal and grow your connection to the people around you, but not necessarily the people themselves, because they have to do their work. Is that a fair statement?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
That is one of the things that I really like to share with people, is sometimes people feel like in a marriage, for example, if things aren't working well, that both people have to do individual work to see that relationship change. And it's helpful if both people are doing individual work, but just one person alone changing the dynamic of what is happening and doing their own inner work and bringing more love and more happiness and more peace, that alone will shift what it is that you are putting into that relationship, and in time will shift the way the other person is responding to you.
So, again, what I think we're going back to is that doing that inner work is certainly a gift, but it's a very powerful tool that impacts everyone.
It impacts everybody. Everybody that you touch feels the energy of who you are and what it is that's going on within you. And we believe that we can cover up we can cover up our anger, we can cover up our frustration or our lack of fulfillment by putting on this smile when we walk out the door in the morning. And that simply isn't true, because people feel the energy that is within you, even if you feel like you're covering it up. It's just like we all know those moments when somebody walks in a room and we look at them and just feel really good about who that person is, even though we've never met them and they haven't said a word. And then we've also had the experience where somebody else will walk in a room or we'll be introduced to somebody and we just don't feel good or don't feel right about what it is that that person may be emanating in their energy. And it is because energy is everything. And if we want to shift how things are happening in our life, we have to look at what it is that's going on within us and what we are emanating, what energy we are sharing with the world. I share in clarity that it's not just important what actions you take. What is more important is what energy you are wrapping up those actions with. That determines what happens as a result of the action you're taking.
Diane Altamar, author of Clarity, 10 Proven Steps to Transform Your Life. We're going to take a break, Diane, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this business of what you wrap it up in so that folks can really be clear about what you're saying. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Transitions Tuesday here on Mind Talk. Don't go away. Diane Altamir, author of Clarity, 10 Proven Strategies to Transform Your Life. Diane, give us a little bit more clarity about the last piece that we were talking about. You said that what you wrap yourself up in is important.
Yes. Yeah, so I was talking about it's not just the actions that we're taking in our life, but it is the energy that we are wrapping each action in. And I call it your emotional wrapping paper. So it really helps to picture that each action you take is wrapped up in some emotion. And if you can imagine giving somebody the gift of your time, and let's just for a moment pretend that your time could be wrapped up in a box. So maybe you're meeting with a friend for lunch, and imagine that in your hands you have a box of time, and it's been beautifully wrapped with the energy of love. So your wrapping paper is love. And maybe that box has an exquisite or beautiful gold wrapping paper and this amazing bow on top. And when you give this gift of your time wrapped in this way, you feel loving, and the person that's receiving it feels loved. But now, just imagine that you're giving that same gift of time. And instead of this beautifully wrapped box, your box is wrapped in black and red, tattered wrapping paper that's all torn up. It's got scratches all over it, and it's been so damaged that the box is mangled. And although you're still giving your time, the emotion, the emotional wrapping paper that you're sharing may now be anger or resentment. And so as you give your time, you feel angry and resentful, and the person receiving it feels that same anger and resentment. And although this is an imaginary scenario, it's really helpful for us to visualize what we're wrapping our daily life and actions in. Because the emotion that you bring to each action is what determines what is going to happen. And as you are giving, whatever it is you're giving in life, what you want to pay most attention to is, what energy do I want to put in this box? When I go meet my friend for lunch, or when I have that business call that is really important for my career, what energy do I want to bring? Do I want to bring passion and excitement and connection? Do I want to bring respect or love? What is it that I want to wrap up my action in? And that will determine everything for you.
You know, the visual that you just offered, I think, is really helpful to really have a greater understanding of what you're saying about the impact, the existence, the fact of, and the impact of the energy that you put into something. Because you're right, you can give something with love, and that's how it's received. You can be anxious, and it's going to be a totally different gift. So I think that visual is really helpful. You talk about your default emotion. What is a default emotion?
A default emotion is a term that I coined, and it's simply that emotion that you go to often, even if it doesn't fit the situation or is inappropriate for what's happening. So our default emotion can be frustration or sadness or anger, for example, and it's really covering up a deeper emotion. And that emotion that's underneath is what we are often avoiding, but it is what is essential for us to get connected to, because when we get connected to the true emotion or the emotion we're avoiding, that is when we can really feel what's happening and the healing can begin. And so, for example, if frustration is your default emotion, if you feel yourself just getting frustrated often, what may be underneath that frustration is disappointment or not feeling good enough. And instead of really connecting with how disappointed you are with what's happening and how that may be transferring from an earlier time in your life, it is sometimes easier to just get frustrated and give up on what it is we're doing. But that doesn't get us where we want to go. And so getting to the emotion, which is step 5 of clarity, getting to the default emotion and connecting with what is underneath that default emotion is really what's going to help give you that insight so that you can make shifts in your life.
In making shifts in your life, again, what I'm hearing sort of a stream throughout our conversation is that you, the individual, have a tremendous amount of power that you can exercise to improve you, to change you in the ways that you would like.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you're currently facing in your life. It can be something so difficult and so challenging that you don't think you're going to really be able to ever move beyond this. But the truth is that you can deal with what's going on within you if you have the tools with which to really process what is happening. And I'm here to really share that you don't have to muscle through the pain or, worse, cover it up with other things. You do, just like you said, have the power to make a huge shift in your life. And it really is by doing this inner work that you can stop repeating the same experiences over and over again.
One of the recommendations you make is to let go of the beliefs that are in opposition to what you truly want. And yet, if you're walking around with beliefs that are really in opposition to what you want, my thought is that those beliefs go way back. They're really kind of ingrained, and letting go is of those beliefs is no simple matter.
It's not simple. However, if you have the tools to make that shift and work through and practice moving beyond those beliefs, you can absolutely do that. And it is essential in order to create something new in our life, because our beliefs determine what we can and can't create. So if you have a belief in place that is in opposition to what it is that you want to create, there is no other way to get where you want to go other than doing the inner work and really going inside into that place of inner reflection to look at where that belief originated. Because sometimes it's not even our belief. It is a belief that was passed on through generations, and we just adopted it or accepted it as our own. And so, like you said, it's not simple to just let go of that and believe something else. But when you use the tools in the book to move through that and actually heal and move beyond your connection to that belief, you can start to connect with a belief that is aligned with what you want to create and practice connecting with that belief as well. So it is a practice. It's not just something that we all of a sudden say one day, that belief isn't aligned with what I want to create, so I'm just going to drop it. It takes more effort and work than that. However, it's absolutely doable. And that's one of the things that I am hearing so often as people are reading Clarity, is that it's an easy read. And so what I have created is a very bite-sized way to go into a step or a chapter in the book and really do maybe 5 or 10 minutes of reading and a small bite-sized exercise, and then integrate that into your life and just watch how things start to shift.
You know, it is an easy read, and I noted that, you know, it's interspersed with stories of real people and your own personal experiences. Let me ask you a question about step three, embrace your inner child. At this point in our lives, I don't think there's a person on the planet who hasn't heard that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace your inner child. Okay, what does that mean? My inner child is gone. Isn't he or she? I'm an adult now.
Your inner child is alive and with you every day. So maybe you've witnessed it in one of your relationships as you've watched some grown adult act childish. Or maybe you've watched somebody storm out of a room or throw a tantrum or snap at you. That inner child is the part of you that is sometimes that little voice in your head that's proclaiming, it's not fair. I want what she has. I'm tired of feeling this way and I can't take this anymore. In each one of us, we have an inner child that holds the feelings and experiences that we had earlier in our life. And most of the time when we act out in ways that are inappropriate or immature, we're not acting out from our adult self. That little girl or little boy is in the driver's seat and he or she is responding or reacting to what's happening. So it's crucial for us to connect with our inner child and allow this part of us to communicate their feelings, because so often we let that inner child, that little girl or little boy, run the show without realizing that that is what's happening.
So I hear hope. There's hope.
Yes.
That you really can do something incredibly different. Tell us the story of Alyssa. You coached with Alyssa, and you describe her as a mother who was losing emotional control. What was going on in Alyssa's life?
Alyssa is a mother who is full of many emotions, and there are probably many listeners who can relate to Alyssa. So what was happening for her in the story is she was getting ready in the morning and instructed her little boy to get dressed, and they were running late, as they always are, and when she came back 15 minutes later, he had not even started getting dressed, getting ready for school. And so she, because she had so many emotions within her that she had not dealt with through the years, and because she had a lot of anxiety and was angry in that moment, right? She was transferring what she was experiencing into that moment. She picked up one of his toys and whipped it across the room. And she saw the look on his face, which was, he was 6 years old. So she saw this shock and this terror, and he was crying because her emotion erupted onto him, and it was not appropriate for what was happening. He was just a little boy who didn't follow his mom's rules and wasn't getting ready for school. And so what is really important about that is, as I'm going around and doing book signings and talking about the book, so many mothers are connecting with me afterwards, and one woman in a book signing the other evening just started crying as she was talking to us about this, because for us mothers, it is so relatable and understandable that whatever it is that's going on within us then gets transferred to our child. If we're not careful, if we are not proactively taking care of ourselves and doing what we need to do to really express our emotions, they erupt at an inappropriate time without our control. And so what's really important about this story is that, and this is the most important thing that I want to communicate, you do not have to make yourself feel bad. On top of what just happened for Alyssa, what we don't want her to do is to shame herself for having thrown that toy. There is a reason that she threw the toy. It doesn't condone the behavior. However, let's work on what's going on within ourselves so that we don't do that to our children or our spouses or people at the post office, right? We have experiences all the time in cars where people are driving aggressively or you accidentally cut somebody off and they react so intensely that it's just not appropriate for the circumstance of what happened. And it is because they are projecting those repressed emotions into the situation because they don't know where else to put them or what else to do with them. And that really is part of step 6 in clarity, which is listening to the voice of our emotions, connecting with what's really going on within us, and being able to express it, get it out of our body, so that we don't hold on to it and create this ticking time bomb inside of ourselves and then have these suppressed emotions erupt because they're just waiting for a place to explode.
And, you know, it's an easy concept to imagine that Alyssa instantly began to shame herself, blame herself, sort of take a bath in guilt, and then she could, in theory, sort of emotionally, just kind of be down for the count because she's heaping so much negative emotions and thoughts on herself about herself.
Yeah, so she just now piles all of that internally on top of it. And so that child or her spouse or somebody else is going to get those emotions at some point as well.
The impact of social media on relationships, what's your sense of that? Do you think that social media is a help or a harm, or what do you think?
I think it's really in the way that we use it. It is an amazing tool for us to connect with people on a kind of quick moment-to-moment connection. It is not a place to create depth and meaningful relationships. Although you can meet somebody on social media or connect with somebody on social media and then choose to deepen your relationship in a different way. However, it really can be something that makes it difficult for us if we are not feeling good about who we are, because comparison is heightened as a result of all the photos that we're seeing and being bombarded with on a daily basis. And if we're not feeling good about who we are in the moment, when we see somebody posting a photo of their Mother of the Year moment, or we see them posting a picture where their husband said these amazing things about them as a result of their 20-year marriage and the anniversary dinner they had the night before, we can feel bad about ourselves. And so it's something to really pay attention to. I know in coaching a lot of people that comparison is becoming very difficult because of all the photos that we're being bombarded with. And it's important to really remember that this is just a snapshot of what one person is experiencing. And we often jump to the conclusion that that's the entirety of their life, and then we use it against ourselves. We say to ourselves, why can't I have that, right? Or why doesn't my husband say those nice things about me, like her husband posted?
Or in the case of Alyssa, you know, going to social media for comfort and, in fact, may get the reverse, which helps her to feel even more negatively about herself.
Yes, absolutely. We have to be very careful when we are communicating with other people, because their response or reaction to what we're sharing is very simply based on their life experience and what is okay or not okay according to their own beliefs. And so it's really important for us to be able to always, regardless of what we're experiencing, honor how we are feeling. There is no bad emotion. They're simply emotions. Just like thoughts come and go, our emotions come and go as well, and they're part of being human. And so when we avoid an emotion, we're denying ourselves the experience of being connected to ourselves and really gaining the wisdom that's inherent in that feeling.
Diane Altemare, author of Clarity, 10 Proven Strategies to Transform Your Life. We will take a break. And when we come back, Diane, I want you to talk to us about Marcus and the marriage that he had that worked to destroy his self-esteem. Folks, we'll be right back. Diane, talk to us about Marcus and his marriage. What was going on?
So Marcus was in a marriage with a woman who was very strong and demanding, and it reminded him a lot of his sister. Growing up, he lost his mom at an early age, and so his sister took on a motherly role. And again, because of some of the emotions that she was dealing with that hadn't been fully processed, she could become very demanding or condescending, and she was very mean to him. She would sometimes tie him up in the closet just for fun and games and just leave him there. And so Marcus, because he really looked to her as a mother figure and because he lost his mother, he would just accept and deal with whatever it was that his sister would do, because he knew that she loved him deep down and that she was too dealing with the difficulty of their experience. And what was really important for Marcus in his marriage was to realize that he was transferring the way he showed up as a little boy with his sister to his marriage and the way that he was showing up with his wife. And he felt lost in his marriage. He felt disconnected. And he really couldn't create what it was that he wanted until he was able to really connect with that little boy and see how that experience from the past was being transferred into his marriage and allow that little boy the space to communicate how he felt then and how he was being triggered now in the current relationship. And by doing that, what he was really able to do was no longer have to show up in his marriage as that little boy who was scared to death in that closet. And he was able to communicate more powerfully what he needed and connect to his wife as an adult instead of the little boy.
It's interesting because it certainly gives additional clarity to the notion that if something is unacceptable, you kind of don't need to try to make it acceptable. That's not useful. I'm thinking about what Marcus told himself about his sister's egregious behavior as really a way to kind of manage for himself and to survive in that moment.
And that's what happens to many of us. Many of us grow up in experiences that are very traumatic or difficult, and we make a decision in that moment to accept what is happening because we don't know what else to do. It's really a survival mechanism. and we decide that we're just going to put on a happy face and make it through what is happening because we don't have the support or the understanding that there is something else that we can do.
The concept of using your fear, and we've been talking about fear in different ways throughout our conversation today, because certainly fear shows up in folks' lives very often in lots of different ways. You say use your fear. How does one use fear?
That's a great question. We all experience fear. It's a part of our natural human emotions. And what happens when we are in fear is we are disconnected from the part of us that knows that we can accomplish what it is that we've set out to do. We are disconnected from our strength or our power or our courage. And in that moment, what you want to do is really connect with the fear and take it through step six, listening to the voice of your emotions and understand why that fear is present. So the voice of that fear might be saying to you, I'm not good enough. I can't do this. This isn't possible. Or you might hear something more specific like, I need more preparation in order to be really able to communicate what I want to communicate. And so if you can connect with the fear and identify what that fear is trying to express to you, you will gain the insight as to what you need to do next. And the other thing that's really important is fear is often being transferred from the past. It's often showing up because something happened in the past that we didn't feel good about, or an event happened and we are now afraid that that's going to reoccur. And so the more we reconnect to ourselves and understand what we're afraid of and why we're afraid, and we can bring compassion to ourselves and to that fear, the less we will allow it to stop us from doing what it is that we want to do in that moment, and we'll be able to really revere that fear as a friend and just take it along with us on the ride.
So pay attention to your fear, but don't allow yourself to drown in it.
Exactly. You really want to connect with the fear and understand why it is here and be able to then take action that's aligned with what you want to create anyway. And sometimes that's easier said than done. Sometimes you need to do some more inner work to really connect with and understand how to move past that fear. And you can absolutely do that. That's step 9 in clarity, faith versus fear.
I'd like for you to share with us the story of Rebecca, because it seems to me as though she was dealing with some past fears. She complained to you that her husband would take away the love that he gave, which is a really interesting way to describe her feeling. What was she talking about? What did she mean?
So Rebecca had grown up in an alcoholic family, and her father was the alcoholic. And what would happen is she would often feel when he was drinking that he was gone because he became different. And she felt abandoned by him. And so it was showing up, like it does often, in her marriage. And when her husband, although he wasn't an alcoholic and he wasn't drinking, when he was dealing with something in life, or he was busy at work, or he was upset with her, whatever the circumstance was, and he was disconnected with Rebecca, her reaction to that was extreme, because it was not only Rebecca as the adult experiencing that abandonment or that disconnection, but that little girl within her that remembered that from the past with her father was being triggered. And so that little girl was feeling those feelings too. And that's really why sometimes we don't understand why it is that we are reacting so intensely to something, to that it may seem like it's out of proportion to what's actually happening. The reason is because it's also the little girl or the little boy within us that is reacting or responding to what's currently going on in our life.
It sounds like it's another opportunity to really be curious about what's going on. I think that as adults, we kind of get a sense when we're over the top with a reaction. And so maybe that's a time to say, I wonder what that was all about.
Yes, that is a perfect time to, again, not make yourself feel bad or shame yourself for however you reacted, but to, like you said, use curiosity and identify, you know, there's something really going on with me, and I'm going to love myself enough. I'm going to have enough compassion for myself to identify or investigate it or explore it a little bit more so that I can understand myself at a deeper level and know what to do in the future if and when that comes up again.
You talk about loving yourself and having compassion for yourself, and I think about the people who use any number of things to soothe their own angst, which of course can include many emotions, whether it's using food for comfort or alcohol or shopping or sex or whatever it is. But folks do that to try to cover up or to try to soothe themselves. How does one stop those negative behaviors? It's a big question, I know, but how do you stop those negative behaviors so that you can begin to focus more compassionately on yourself? How do you approach those negative behaviors with compassion so that you can then make space to change them?
It is a big question, but it's a great question. And I like to really believe that in clarity that I've broken it down in a simple step-by-step fashion that you can work through. And the most important thing in any of those vices that we're using to cover up our emotions is to just be gentle with yourself. There's a reason that you're using something else to cover up how you're feeling. And it may be because the feeling feels to you so insurmountable, or you just don't have the tools with which to know how to move through it or process it. So by being able to identify what's happening for you in your life that's causing you to need this comfort, you will start to get to some insight. And once you get that insight and you understand what the root is of really why you need that comfort or what you're covering up, you can then do that inner reflection. Connect to yourself. Ask yourself, how am I doing? How am I feeling? How are things working out for me right now in my life? And if they're not, what do I need to do in order to really give myself the love and the compassion and the tools? And that is really one of the things that seems to be, in all the 16 years of coaching that I have done with people, that is what seems to be so difficult at times for people, is to give themselves, to invest the time, the money, and the energy into doing their own inner work. Not necessarily always because they're afraid of what's going to come up, but because they don't feel worthy. And that is another reason that we obviously want to do inner reflection and inner work, is because not feeling worthy is just a small part of our human experience. And there is a part of us that absolutely knows we are beyond worthy of creating our life the way we want it to be.
So as you go through this work that you outline in Clarity, and as we come to the close of our time today, is there something that you can share with the audience to help them, once they start this process, to stay on this path and to perhaps not get so discouraged that they stop?
Yes, absolutely. Everything in this book can really be done in small little bite-sized snippets. So just make a commitment to yourself that you will spend 10 minutes a day reading through a part of the step and then doing, there are bite-sized exercises in each step that are very small. And you could read that in 30 seconds as you're eating breakfast before you go to work and look at how you can integrate that into your day. And it is often helpful to get a journal or write in your iPad and just write down some of your insights as you go through the book and look at what it is that may really resonate for you. There are different stories, like you shared earlier. I share stories from my own life and how I moved through those issues, and I share stories of other examples of people and how they moved through it. So if you want to read something really quickly, go in and read one of the stories, and if it resonates with you, then continue on and take that bite-sized exercise with you that day.
And literally, you've entitled your exercises bite-sized exercises. Diane,
yes.
Let us have your web address so folks can learn more.
Yes, it's DianeAltomar.com, and that's Diane with one N, Alto, which is A-L-T-O, and Mar is M-A-R-E. And if you go to DianeAltomar.com, you can download Chapter 1 of Clarity free and begin reading right away.
That's a great way to start this process, is to read it right online. Diane, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for sharing your clarity with us.
Thank you, Pamela. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to take the place of any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is available to you on demand at myndtalk.org. Again, that's myndtalk.org, available on demand whenever you choose. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. That's 301-654-5286. But the best way to be in touch is by going to mindtalk.org, looking around the website and seeing what you see. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, well, then that's kind of what it is. Unacceptable. Thank you.